Welcome to the September 4th, 2014 Drupalize Me podcast. Hi, I'm Amber Himes-Matz, and I'm your hostess for the Drupalize Me podcast. Today, we're talking about Drupal as a services platform, and I've got with me some authors from the upcoming issue of Drupal Watchdog magazine, which is going to focus on web services in Drupal. So today on the podcast, we've got Peta Hoyes, Scott Hooker, Lynn Clark, and Larry Garfield, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves. So Peta, can you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm Peta Hoyes. I'm Drupal Watchdog's executive editor and also general manager of Tag 1 Consulting.
Great. And Scott?
I'm Scott Hooker. I'm a lead developer in the UK at Commerce Guys.
Lynn?
Hi, I'm Lynn Clark. I'm a senior performance engineer with Tag 1 Consulting. And in my open source work, I collaborated on the Drupal 8 REST initiative, and I also work on Happy.js, which is a Node REST framework, and a little bit on AngularJS.
Cool. And Larry?
Hi, I'm Larry Garfield. I'm a senior architect with Palantir.net. I'm also the web services initiative lead for Drupal 8 and the de facto Drupal ambassador to Symfony and the PHP world. The inclusion of lots of Symfony components into Drupal 8 happened on my watch as part of the web services initiative initially.
Great. All right. But before we get started, let's talk about what's coming up in the world of Drupal and Drupalize Me. This week on Drupalize Me, we are excited to release KNP University's Beginning PHP series. We are partnering with KNP Labs, who are one of the top Symfony 2 development and training companies in the world. And they have a video training site called KNP University. And it's kind of like Drupalize Me is to Lullabot. And so we are partnering with them to host some of their videos on Drupalize Me. The first series that we're starting off with is one of our most requested topics in our suggestion box, which is PHP for Beginners. And so we're going to kick it off with PHP for Beginners, episode one, and you'll learn about the basics of PHP through building a real project site. And next week, we'll wrap up this first introductory series, and we'll continue that series later on with episodes 2 and 3 from KNP University. And we'll also have lessons in the queue on PHP namespaces, dependency injection, introductions to Symfony 2, Composer, and Twig. So all of those are going to be in the pipeline here over the next several months. And so we're excited to get that kicked off this week. In events, we've got several events coming up. It's kind of the busy summer season is wrapping up, but we've got a couple of Lullabots attending DareConf, which is in London on September 22nd for the next couple days after that. And then DrupalCon Amsterdam, of course, is coming up September 29th through October 3rd. And there's extended sprints for Drupal 8 happening before and after DrupalCon. And on the Monday of that week, there's training and the community summit is happening and that sort of thing. So you're going to want to check out those extra events that are happening before and after the event. I'll be there. And then we've got quite a few Lullabot speaking, Dave Reed, Joe Schindler, Nate Haug, Wampy, and Addie Berry. And if you want to attend the community summit on Monday, which Addie is involved with, it's free, but you do have to register. So go to the DrupalCon Amsterdam site to sign up for that. And if you've got a particular project, a community project that you're working on, you can let them know what it is you want to work on and what you need help with and that sort of thing. And since I'm here in Portland, Oregon, in the US, I'm biased to what's happening on the West Coast, and we've got a couple of events happening on the West Coast. The Pacific Northwest Drupal Summit is happening in Portland, Oregon, October 17th through the 19th. We're very excited for our keynote speakers, which are Angie Byron and Greg Dunlap. We're currently accepting session proposals, and registration is open. So that session proposal deadline is coming up really quickly here, beginning of September. So we're looking for intermediate to advanced developer sessions, but really a variety of sessions, anything about Drupal business, Drupal development, that sort of thing. So check out that, and we'll have a link in the podcast page to that page. And then Bad Camp is in San Francisco, November 6th through the 9th, and I believe registration is now open. All right, that's enough for news and events. Let's get started. So, PETA, the next Drupal Watchdog issue is focusing on web services in Drupal. Can you tell us a little bit more about this upcoming issue?
Sure, Amber. Thank you for inviting us. The previous edition of Drupal Watchdog, we tackled the beast of all the new features that are coming in Drupal 8 and how to get started using it. It was a lot of information that we could barely squeeze into a double issue. In this next issue, which is due out on newsstands and at DrupalCon Amsterdam in late September, we're taking a more in-depth look at one of the most talked about or anticipated aspects of Drupal 8, which is Drupal as a services platform. In a nutshell, web services simply means using Drupal to manage content, but using something else to deliver or interact with the content via APIs. This interoperability with Drupal 8, I kind of liken to an engine with a universal adapter. You can plug just about anything into it. Or more jokingly, I kind of refer to it as a headless horseman. Which at first glance might be a little bit scary to grok, but may very well become a legend, especially to enterprise systems. I think of D8 as a game changer, especially for big sites. And this next edition covers both the technical benefits and how-tos of using web services, but also puts D8 in the context of the future of Drupal. You know, that being the potential shift from, you know, the quote, everyman's Drupal to Drupal for the enterprise. We can't prognosticate, but we can at least ask some good questions. So some other topics that are going to get covered in this issue are practical tips like writing painless user docs and connecting Drupal to Salesforce. We continue our series on Drush, the Swiss Army knife of Drupal. We even walk through version control strategies and how D8 can make responsive themes work. And in a very humorous and I hope inspiring way, our very own Howard Stern doppelganger, Ron Brower, interviews real people in the Drupal community. In a nutshell, that's kind of what's coming up.
Very good. Very good. So getting into kind of more of the technical definition, what are web services anyway? Why should I care about it? Why are they cool?
So I don't think there's a canonical official definition of web services. The way I usually describe it is like this. You have the internet. That is data passing back and forth between computers over TCP/IP, over just, you know, connect the broad network of everything. A subset of that is the web, which is data traveling back and forth over the internet using HTTP, specifically Hypertext Transfer Protocol, is the web. And traditionally, that has meant the data being sent is HTML web pages, CSS files, sometimes JavaScript, images, things that are intended to show up in a web browser like Chrome or Firefox or Internet Explorer and be viewed by a human being. Web services are things sent over HTTP that are not that. So it's information being sent back and forth over the same channel as the web pages were used to, but intended to be consumed by something that's not a person looking at a page. So that could be information being sent to a browser out of band. So something that's not a page getting sent to a browser so that a JavaScript code in the browser can do something programmatically with it. It can be something sent from one server to another over that same mechanism. It's, you know, in general, it's using the same underlying plumbing as web pages for computers to talk to each other and programs to talk to each other rather than to just display pages for people to see.
Cool.
The advantage of that is it's a, you know, it is the universal tube, for lack of a better term, universal pipeline that pretty much any firewall is going to let through. Almost any network-enabled device can understand it. HTTP is a complex but fairly straightforward spec, so you can use it. It has a lot of functionality built in, and it makes it really easy to talk computer to computer, program to program, and do all kinds of really cool automation and advanced functionality over that common pipeline. You can certainly do a lot of that same functionality with other channels, like, you know, email or a lot of streaming media, or, you know, a lot of other things, you know, don't go over the same web connection, but that web framework gives a really, really powerful tool chain to work with. Now, a subset of web services, and what I think is where it really gets interesting, is REST or hypermedia. The terms are sort of interchangeable, which is, I like to describe as sending data computer to computer over HTTP, using HTTP the way it is supposed to be used, using it as designed, as opposed to saying, oh, I'm just going to, you know, throw data through it and ignore all the fancy features that HTTP gives me and re-implement them myself. You don't want to do that. You want to leverage the linking capability and the caching capability and all the other things that HTTP specifically gives you. And that's kind of the gold standard to shoot for when doing anything programmatically here is, you know, using HTTP, the full spec, to talk system to system, and that's REST or hypermedia. And that's where, you know, good people want to go.
So anyone who has written a PHP script to process a form kind of understands some of the basics of HTTP, like a GET or POST. Can you just expand a little bit on what you mean by kind of this inherent functionality of REST and HTTP, and what are those actions? What is it that it can do, and sure. why does REST take advantage of that?
So, short version. So point one is everything in the network is a resource, and a resource is identified by a URI, which is URL essentially, and you interact with those resources at these universal addresses by sending GET requests, which is a read, a PUT request, which is a write, a POST request, which is process, or a DELETE request, which is kill this thing. And you know, so you don't just channel everything over a POST request like, say, SOAP or XMLRPC have generally done. Then on top of that, you say that it's not just resources on their own, but resources can have a reference to another resource, a link to another resource, and you can in fact follow that link. So just like you look at a web page and, you know, you go to the home page and you see up at the top there's a navigation bar, you follow one of those links to get to another resource, which is another page, you follow a link on that page to another page, and so on. Mm-hmm. In a good RESTful API, the program can do that same thing. It loads this resource and there's a link on it from this, you know, the node is a resource at a given URI. It has a link to the author of that node, and you can follow that link and get the user profile of the user who created that node.
So it gives you a means of traversing the different resources that are available in the API. So maybe you have a starting point, and then you go from there.
Right. And then you also, because when you follow those rules, you can layer on other functionality in HTTP like caching, which becomes essentially free if you're doing it correctly, because any web server, any proxy knows how to deal with caching. And so you get some really good caching capabilities just for free when you do it right. And other things like that I won't go into that are a bit more esoteric, but that's a short version.
That caching capability, that actually comes just with HTTP. You don't actually need hypermedia for that. And I think that's one of the places where people get a little mixed up, is that they think that some of these things that they like about HTTP, like caching, require REST. They think that you know, there's a misunderstanding around what REST actually means and what the hypermedia constraint of REST means. So there's a lot that you can get, a lot of those benefits you can get without the hypermedia. It's just the HTTP.
Cool. So when I think of Drupal, I think of I log in, I create some content, I publish it, I have content on my website. And then what we're talking about with web services, I feel there's a little bit of a disconnect here for me. So why would I want to use Drupal as a services platform? What does Drupal give me to help deliver these resources?
So there are a lot of frameworks right now for creating RESTful web services. And so it's a good question about why you would use Drupal. I think that you would still want to use Drupal if you like the admin that you have for, you know, entering data into a database, the admin interface for that. If you like the way that you can model your data without actually having to structure your own database tables and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So if you're using it for those reasons, then Drupal gives you a way in Drupal 8 to expose that all using services. Jeff Eaton actually just started an interesting Twitter discussion earlier today about headless Drupal. You know, basically making use of the things that Drupal does well, which is allow you to have a whole bunch of users who are interacting with forms and inputting data at the same time. But then taking the part that it doesn't do as well, like theming, and moving that off to a system that's more appropriate to it. So that's when you might want to use services with Drupal.
I think it's also important to note that using Drupal the way we're used to using Drupal and using Drupal as a services platform are not mutually exclusive. You absolutely can have a site that's serving pages, you know, produced by the theme system and views and panels and so on, and also serving the same content as a service for programs to read. I've done that a couple of times for different projects, and you can get some really good capabilities out of that.
That's precisely what we do on Drupalize Me, actually. So we have Drupal delivering content of the website, but then we also have a services API that delivers content to the mobile apps. So it's the same content, but it's delivered a couple of different ways.
Exactly.
So what are some examples of what is possible with web services?
Someone want to take that before I talk?
So I think to just go back to the first point about why you would do web services in Drupal is so you don't do everything twice, I guess, was kind of the summary from that. If you've already got a Drupal site and you've already got content in it and you want to serve it to a mobile app like you do with Lullabot or Drupalize Me, why have two separate systems when you can utilize web services? And one of the use cases we've had at Commerce Guys is quite a lot of e-commerce stores don't have the budget to have a fully native app where all of their content is held separately and the app is powered by itself. They only have kind of the resource to do almost a HTML5 app that you can run natively with things like PhoneGap or there's a variety of different platforms you can run the actual application on. But The good thing with web services is you get all of this content delivered to your application for free. Like Larry said, you don't have to do everything twice. So be it a kind of brochure app where you just want to deliver content or where you actually want to have communication between the application and your website, you can do all of this stuff with web services quite easily. So if you had a kind of primitive e-commerce store that was just selling sort of physical products and you wanted to have a native app for it, then you can do that with web services.
Cool. So let's say I wanted to get started using web services. There's definitely some acronyms and terms that I need to know, and specifically with like the data formats. So what do I need to know about the different data formats? I've seen JSON or XML. What do I need to know about that? What's the difference between those two formats and why would I want to choose one or the other?
Well, I actually wrote about this in Drupal Watchdog, about the distinction between JSON and XML. They're both data exchange formats. They actually kind of have different histories. XML came out of, you know, big standardization efforts with a lot of companies. JSON was just kind of discovered. But in essence, they do very similar things. They make it possible for you to take some data that's in your system, maybe in an object, and turn it into a string that you can send over the wire. You can send across the web to another system, which can then take that string and break it up back into an object. And so that process is called serialization and deserialization. And In the mid to late 2000s, there was kind of this antagonism between the two camps. XML gives you some ways to, extend the meaning of the underlying, meta language. Basically, make it so that multiple systems can understand what the data inside of XML is based on these things called schemas. JSON traditionally hasn't had that. There's some work to introduce that with something called JSON schema. That's a little controversial. A lot of the people that were involved in XML, in the actual XML standardization, say that this is a really bad idea. So it's interesting. But JSON has traditionally been much more lightweight, less semantics, less standardization around it. At this point, you want to, most likely, unless you know that you're targeting an ecosystem that uses XML tools, you want to use JSON. A lot of the single-page application frameworks, such as Angular, Ember, they are, at least Angular, is only out of the box working with JSON. And so we're, Robin Bergeon, who is the W3C, one of the W3C HTML5 editors, actually wrote this really interesting article called Web 2024, kind of a satirical but also somewhat serious, a look at what the web is going to be like in 2024. And one of his points is that we're going to reach the web of data in a way that we never thought that we were going to, which is all of these people working in uncoordinated ways to make their data available via JSON so that they can consume it in their own single-page apps. And then as a byproduct, this data is out there in the world. So we're really seeing Tim Bray, who was very involved in the first draft of XML, actually said, most of APIs are JSON over HTTP at this point. So I think that really, unless you know that you need to use XML, you should be using JSON.
Cool. And so that you brought up like Angular and Ember. And so these JavaScript tools, frameworks, whatever, they're requiring JSON. And so that's also contributing to JSON being so popular and being what you actually have to use. So part of it is knowing how you're going to use it in the end. And that's really kind of maybe the first question is, how are you going to use this data before picking a format? And maybe that exactly predicts what it is that you're going to use.
Yes, you need to look at your consumers.
Yeah, a large part of the distinction, as Lynn alluded to, XML is considerably more extensible. So you can evolve that without breaking APIs a lot more easily than you can with JSON. JSON is much easier to parse, so it's much kinder to the developer who's building the app in the first place. So most people use JSON because they want what's easy.
Right.
You're more likely to see XML in server-to-server situations, I think. Mm-hmm. I've used it in that regard, doing syndication between Drupal sites, in fact. But most APIs that are going to get consumed primarily by a browser application of some kind are using JSON, just because parsing JSON from JavaScript in a browser application is so dead simple easy.
Cool. Dead simple easy. We like that, right?
Yeah.
So what about web services in the world outside of Drupal? We kind of mentioned Angular and other things. When might it not make sense to use Drupal? When does it make sense just have your API? And is it just because you don't need the administrative tools, or you don't have your data structured in any kind of meaningful way in Drupal? When do we ditch Drupal?
It depends in part on whether you're talking Drupal 7 or Drupal 8.
Okay.
Drupal 7, its web services support is all bolted on via contrib modules that, while they do yeoman's work trying to enable it, have to work around the fact that Drupal core itself really doesn't, support web services. It was not designed with that concept in mind. In Drupal 8, we've rebuilt most of the core system to assume that we could be serving web services at any time. And so there's a lot better support built into core for doing basic web services support. And actually, Lynn wrote a substantial part of that support.
Now, are there some security concerns as well as when you might not want to use Drupal, like Drupal 7 to deliver web services? Does that play into it at all? Like authentic delivering data via JSON that's accessible via URL that you may not want to have out there in the world. And does that make sense? Like, are there any authentication concerns or security concerns?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You are going to be using a lot of the same authentication specifications that you'll be using outside of Drupal too. For example, in core, there's HTTP basic auth. Now, you don't want to use that unless you have HTTPS enabled, but now that Google is basically requiring you to do HTTPS if you want to get ranked, we're going to see a lot of sites moving over to being HTTPS by default.
Right.
That's Drupal 8 core.
Yes, Drupal 8 core. And, you know, there's an OAuth module, which actually a Lullabot Wompy started, or has been maintaining at least. So a lot of those auth issues are pretty much the same as you would see elsewhere.
Okay. So that's not really the tipping point at all.
In my experience, so the project I talk about in my watchdog article, we had a CMS problem where we were not generating pages aside from the admin. We were serving content to a web application or to a phone application or a set-top box, or, you know, we wanted the same API to serve a lot of these different systems, and it had to be really, really fast, and it had to be solidly RESTful with all the hypermedia linking and so forth. And Drupal 7 was just not really up to that task, so we built it as two pieces, Drupal and Silex, which is a kind of like a Symfony's little brother. And so then the actual API is being served by Silex, where we just hand code everything. So you know, all of the REST support we just built ourselves because the underlying tools made it really easy to do. Hmm. So that ended up being a lot faster and a lot more robust, a lot better caching than if we'd done that in Drupal 7.
Right. And you know, there are lots of tools that are more tailored to actually delivering RESTful web services. I actually contribute to a project called HappyJS, which is in the Node community. And basically that came out of Walmart's need to not be unintentionally DOS'd by all of the shoppers on Black Friday. So if that's your requirement, you're not going to be going with a Drupal-only solution for your web services.
Hmm. And I think even with Drupal 8, where REST support is substantially better than Drupal 7, there's still going to be a use case for, you know, like we were discussing on Twitter this morning, a multi-system approach for higher-end systems where, you know, you have Drupal doing part of the tasks and you have some other system that's more custom-built and tailored and fine-tuned and optimized doing other parts of it. So I think that's a perfectly legitimate use case for using something that's not Drupal or using Drupal with something that's not Drupal, where you want to have that level of control, that level of performance. You want to really optimize your system. Drupal is a general purpose tool in a lot of ways, and general purpose tools create general purpose solutions. If you want a general purpose solution, that's great. If you want something more tailored and specific and bespoke, pair it up with something else that lets you get that level of control.
And Scott, you're working specifically with Commerce as, you know, the Drupal contrib module, Commerce.
Yes.
And so that's a real specific kind of site, you know, an e-commerce site. So
yes,
what are some of the advantages of using Drupal and maybe in your case specifically Drupal and Commerce to deliver web services? You touched on this a little bit already, but, and maybe if others also want to chime in, like, why would you want to use Drupal? What are some advantages of it? And if Scott,
we could talk for a long time about the advantages of Drupal just as an e-commerce platform, but when you kind of bring in the web services aspect to it, I spent a week in Paris almost a month ago now on a sprint for Commerce 2.x. We didn't get amazingly far, but some of the tools that Drupal 8 gives us are just going to be amazingly powerful for the future of e-commerce. I don't want to touch on too much cliche or I don't want to say Drupal is the future, but I think Dries talked about it quite a lot in his keynote at DrupalCon Austin, in that the future of e-commerce is more about personalization, and it's a lot more in depth than just a website that sells stuff. Right. He talked about Amazon's, he talked about wearable technology such as Google Glass, and without web services, we can't use Drupal to utilize these technologies.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can provide our content to the wealth of devices that the future holds, then our e-commerce sites can become a lot more powerful.
So web services, it sounds like, it's kind of the developer's counterpart to the front-end developer's like responsive web design ecosystem.
That's quite a good
We're trying to make, you know, our data accessible to as many devices as possible. And these devices are just increasing. I mean, the watches and glass and all sorts of different things, you know, not to mention all of the plethora of apps that are out there. And so we're really just trying to counterpart that with that responsive web design effort and make our data accessible in all of these different devices.
That's a really good point. It ties into something that I've been thinking about recently. In the way that people are looking at REST and Drupal 8, it kind of is like they think that they can point and click their data model together and they'll get this beautiful API that comes out of it. And you're just like you need a designer to make a Drupal website look good and work well on the front end, you're going to need an API designer to make your API look good and work well with your site, because there's a lot that's application specific in APIs. There's a lot that can't just be generalized from a data model and you can't just spit out. So I think that it's a little bit of a misconception that people have with the Drupal 8 web services in thinking that they're just going to get this API, you know, a good API for free. You're going to get an API for free, but if you want it to be good, you're going to need to tailor it.
You get about 70% of the API you want. The rest you're on your own. But that, I like that analogy to responsive design, because a lot of the discussion around responsive design in the past few years has been, you know, the web is naturally responsive, we just broke it. And if you stop breaking it and use, you know, embrace the web as it is, then responsive design comes naturally. And to a large extent, REST versus other web services tools like SOAP or XMLRPC is the same way of, you know, we've got this, you know, platform here called HTTP. Let's stop breaking it. Let's stop avoiding it. Let's go with the flow, use the tools that it gives us, use it the way it's designed to be used. And a lot of things just fall into place. And that gives us a lot of flexibility where you're not saying we're going to add this support for this device or that device. It's you're adding support for undefined use cases. And that use case could be an app on someone's Android phone, or it could be, you know, a block on a page that is updating itself every so often by calling back to the site and pulling in fresh data. The support for both of those is the exact same code on the back end. And that's the point, that mm-hmm. by providing that kind of generic data API, it means you can write programs on the other end, be that in a browser or an application or another server, to do whatever. So you know, content deployment is another use case where there's no device involved, but you're still using the same tool chain, the same API underpinnings to automate functionality and make a better site that could still be showing a traditional page at the end of the day.
Cool. So let's go ahead and wrap up. This has been a great conversation. Is there anything else that anyone wanted to be sure and mention?
We touched on a lot of use cases around just Drupal serving content, but we didn't really touch on how you use web services to sort of push data back into Drupal.
Right.
So I'm trying to think of a use case now off the top of my head. So we have a hosting platform, quite a lot of Drupal companies do nowadays, but we utilize web services to power all of the billing functionality. And it's quite a nice feature that we're taking into Commerce 2.x, and we have now in Commerce, Commerce version 1, of this idea of a commerce license. So the ability to sell licensed content, be it access to nodes or be it access to specific user roles. And quite a nice use case for web services is selling or having the ability to purchase this via a web service that gives you access to some sort of external resource. And I don't think we'd be able to do that too easily without web services.
Interesting.
And content deployment I mentioned before is another use case that people may not think of because it's not going out to the public, but it's still then, you know, a standard API and standard support for saying, take content from this site, push it over to that site, server to server, and it should work. That's not in core, but I know there is work to leverage the tools that have been built for core to do that kind of work in Drupal 8.
I think a lot of the classic examples when you read about web services are all about serving the user content on a plethora of different devices or anything in between. But what doesn't get talked about is stuff like content deployment or using it to power different software as a service type applications. And I think Drupal 8 opens up that possibility to us.
Pretty much any time you want to write code that does something with a Drupal site, that it's not PHP code running on the server as part of Drupal itself, web services are your go-to tool.
Equally, I don't think we should paint a bad picture of Drupal 7 as we perhaps have. There is a lot of cool stuff still running on Drupal 7, and quite a lot of customers and clients will have Drupal 7 sites that they don't necessarily have the budget to upgrade to Drupal 8. And I don't think they're at a loss if they want to utilize web services. The tools are there and they do work.
Yeah, and I wrote about this in the upcoming issue of Drupal Watchdog, and something that I'm just kind of getting started with Drupal web services and using views to, you know, create a view and then deliver that as JSON to be consumed by something else. I mean, that's something that, you know, you already know views, and it's in Drupal and it's in 7 and in 8. And so even just getting started with Drupal and web services, you can certainly get started with Drupal 7. And there's a lot of exciting things on the horizon with 8, but you can totally get started with 7. And actually, Drupalize.me has I'll do a quick plug. We have a Joe Chenillard did a series on getting started with web services and Drupal 7. But there are definitely some exciting things on the horizon with Drupal 8. And did we touch on some of the new and different and better types of things that are going on in Drupal 8? We kind of touched on that. Was there anything else that anyone wanted to add about kind of Drupal 8 and web services?
One thing that I often hear is people talk about a REST endpoint when they talk web services. There is no such thing. One of the things that differentiates kind of traditional web services from a REST model is that, like with the services module in Drupal 7, you create a custom URL at which you can read and write something, and then you hard code that URL into, you know, your application, and you send data back and forth, and that's the end of it. When you're dealing with REST, you're not really thinking in those terms. You're thinking in terms of, I'm exposing content at URIs, and those URIs link to each other just like they would as a web page. And so, you know, you are traversing around the API rather than hard-coding a bunch of calls. That means you can actually have a client application learn an API just by viewing it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, there's more work that goes into that. It's not as hand-wavy as I'm making it sound, but you know, it is a different way of thinking than if you're used to doing an RPC call or a SOAP call. And if you're going to build a modern web API, Drupal or otherwise, I would strongly recommend people take the time to learn and understand that distinction. You'll get a much better product out of it if you know you take the time to understand how to use hypermedia, how to use links, how to use the HTTP verbs correctly, than if you try to bring your thought process from SOAP into if you're just doing SOAP calls with JSON instead of XML, you're not actually benefiting. So take the time to learn the new model, and you will get a better product out of it.
Do you guys have any favorite articles or books or resources that kind of have helped you understand, you know, learning those distinctions and learning this technology?
If you really want to learn about rest, which by rest I mean as Fielding would describe it, using hypermedia, then the Restful Web Services Cookbook put out by O'Reilly is actually a really good resource.
Cool.
But you might find that what you think of as rest is not actually rest. If you are really, you might really be thinking about JSON over HTTP, in which case that gets into a lot of, you know, the Restful Web Services Cookbook gets into a lot of detail about things that you might not be as interested in.
Yeah, we'll put that in the links in the on the podcast page. Any other plugs for resources that anyone wants to mention that kind of helped you learn all of this great
Google
stuff?
The Richardson Maturity Module. Richardson Maturity Model. There's a dozen or two articles about it, but that's a good explanation of, you know, evolving your mindset from RPC to hypermedia, and it goes through the steps of here's the part that you do differently, and here's how it makes more sense, and then here's the next thing you do differently, and how it makes more sense, and so forth.
Cool. I think the best article on the Richardson Maturity Model is probably Martin Fowler's. So search for Martin Fowler Richardson Maturity Model. You should get it.
Awesome.
Yeah, we can probably Google that and put it in the show notes.
True.
Yeah.
There's also some articles in the Nexus edition of Drupal Watchdog, I think.
That's another good resource.
And that'll be another good resource.
So I wanted to mention that in the next issue of Watchdog, obviously you get perspectives from some really insightful authors, like you're hearing from Lynn and Larry and Scott, who are also themselves remarkable contributors to Drupal. So I hope your listeners got a window into why this next issue is really good and why web services are so useful. But ultimately, to sort of stay plugged into Drupal, the code, the experts, the revolution of D8, visit DrupalWatchdog.com to subscribe and to contribute. And in late September, we're also launching our new digital version of the magazine.
Awesome.
So we're excited about that.
Great.
Another plug, I'm giving the movie version of my Drupal Watchdog article as a session at DrupalCon Amsterdam, along with the client that we did the project for. So look for that in the schedule.
Great.
I think we're on Thursday.
Okay. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you all very much. This has been very interesting and educational, and I hope you all enjoyed this discussion on Drupal and web services, and be sure and check out the upcoming issue of Drupal Watchdog. If you have topics you want to hear about or comments about this podcast, let us know. You can reach us on Twitter at DrupalizeMe, on Facebook at facebook.com/DrupalizeMe, or on our website at drupalize.me. Until next time, keep on Drupalin'.